Hey Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. I like to sit down with storytellers every week. Sometimes you get an episode that's two a week. Sometimes I'm recording so many Geekscapes and having so much fun talking to storytellers that I don't have time to release them and space them out every week or so. Sometimes you get two a week. Sometimes I'm at a convention and we have a cool panel. I want you all to hear that. So I put that on the feed. The feed is fun, and the show's been going on since 2006. So there's a lot of amazing episodes and guests in the history. But I like to talk to writers or filmmakers or people who work on video games, or maybe they're documentarians or they're comic book creators. If it's pop culture and if it's storytelling, I love to have them on the show. Today is no difference. Author Tilly Bridges is on the show talking about, we're going to be talking about The Matrix. The Matrix to me was the movie, I was in college, that'll date me, and The Matrix came out that summer 99 at the beginning of it. And for me, it was all about Episode One. Remember, that's the movie, Episode One in 1999. But The Matrix just came out of nowhere. It was the filmmakers who did Bound, which I thought was awesome, but kind of went under the radar, right? The movie that you kind of discover at the Blockbuster, VHS. If you haven't seen Bound, it's awesome. Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly in like a kind of a crime caper. Bound is awesome. So I didn't really have The Matrix on my radar, but then you started hearing about it because the movie was awesome. By the time I moved out to California, the sequels came out, and I watched the first sequel. I'm going to talk to Tilly about the sequels, because people love them or people are like, wow, they didn't hold up the first one. But I'll tell you what, and we've talked about it on the show, this last Matrix movie, The Matrix Resurrections, I thought that opening, the meta stuff that was going on in there, and watching as a filmmaker wrote about themselves in the film, and then the whole thing, the layers that were going on in Matrix Resurrections, I hope you appreciated it. I loved that stuff. And then you get some Matrix action. I loved Matrix Resurrections. I thought it was cool. We're going to be talking a lot of Matrix. The paperback book, I'm going to get the name of this. These are trans allegories in The Matrix. We've got author Tilly Bridges coming on, and this is going to be awesome. So Geekscapists, here's the theme song, and I'm excited. All right, Geekscapists, welcome back. The book is called Begin Transmission. Sorry I didn't mention that at the top. And the book can be pre-ordered right now on Amazon. It's out June 27th. There's a hardback edition, a paperback version, and two former Geekscapists, Geekscape guests, Javier Guerrero Marswatch. You may know him as a showrunner of, well, I loved it. I loved the Dark Crystal Netflix series, and Javi show ran that. He also, I think was either a showrunner or one of the exec producers on the Cowboy Bebop series. Javi's got a lot of cool stuff going on. And then Jeff Thorne and I used to write for Lion Force. He wrote Airwolf, the 80s comic, while I wrote Miami Vice. They're both endorsing this book. I'm endorsing this book. You're going to want to check it out. And let's talk to the author of the book. This is Tilly Bridges. Tilly, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me about Begin Transmission. I got the solicitation for this book and it was an automatic yes. This is stuff that I want to talk about. I think it's important. And I think just watching the Wachowski siblings in their journey from where they began The Matrix to the final Matrix film, but then also you can't skip, I mean, to me, as a filmmaker who loves filmmakers, I think Speed Racer is amazing. I'm just going to say it. I think Speed Racer is amazing. Cloud Atlas, I never saw, but we're talking about the Wachowski siblings, but we're also just because they went on their own journey, their own trans journey throughout the making of this. You know, I think where they started and where they ended, you know, was pretty well covered in it. And it all kind of comes to a beautiful crescendo, I think, with that last Matrix Resurrections movie. But what is your story? Where were you in 1999? Who were you in 1999 when the first Matrix film came out? I kind of said my first story in the intro.
Yeah, I was deeply lost in believing that I was the cis man society had told me I was, and being miserable trying to pretend to be that person. And when I saw the first movie, it's really hard to describe. It like spoke to me on this really deep foundational level that I couldn't explain. I couldn't put into words. I couldn't have told you why I connected with it as deeply as I did. I mean, it's like a really amazing sci-fi movie with great action. It's fantastically written and directed and acted, but it was more than that. There was something else in there that was touching something deep inside of me that I had not known about or had looked the other way from for my entire life. And it was many, many years after that when I finally came to understand and accept my own transness. And it was not long after that that the Wachowskis came out and said that they had intended the movies to be an allegory for being trans. And then people just started asking me about that all the time because I was already writing about trans issues and I'm a screenwriter and I'm obviously a trans woman like the Wachowskis are. And so people just kept coming to me and asking me, what does this mean? What are they talking about? What are they trying to say in these allegories? And so I thought I would write an essay about it, and it turned into 24 essays covering the entire franchise because I was so surprised to discover how very specific and deep these movies spoke to what it is to be trans in this world. And so I like to say I sort of accidentally wrote a book. I didn't set out to write it. It was going to be one essay, but it turned into so much because there was so much I wanted people to understand that was just under the surface. So I compiled it all together and revised it and expanded it. And now it's a book that will be out at the end of June.
And Tilly, I love that first Matrix movie. It's the Matrix movie that I've seen multiple times. It's the one that I own.
Sure.
I think it's incredible. What were some of the scenes that, and really to put context on it, I don't want to age you at all. But where were you on your identity journey when you saw that first film? And then what were the scenes in it that started, like, by where were you on your identity journey? I mean, in the context of the people in your life, the people who you possibly weren't going to school with, your family, were they conscious? Was this something that you were vocal about, your trans identity? Were you vocal about it up to that point? Was this something that you were sharing with other people, or was it something that was repressed? And then watching The Matrix, what were the scenes, maybe the blue pill, red pill scene, maybe you know Kung Fu. What were the scenes that started to pull at you and say, wait, this resonates with my voice? And does that make sense? So just to add context.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, looking back now, I can see the signs that were always there because, you know, you don't just suddenly become trans. If you're trans, you've always been trans, but I didn't know what to look for. I didn't know the signs. And I grew up in an environment that was very transphobic. So even if I had known, I would not have been allowed to transition. I would have been told it was wrong and bad and evil. And
was that environment Texas, Florida?
No, it was just the Midwest, Chicago, Cleveland, supposedly liberal cities, but not in my households.
And it's one of those things where I think you could, yeah, maybe not in your own household, but I find that liberal communities as well, and me being as left as can be, I think that it's still a conversation that isn't easy for everyone to wrap their heads around. And I had a conversation driving home Friday. I returned a phone call with a friend of mine from back home. And it is Texas, but this person is it's Austin, so it's fairly liberal. Yeah. And they were having difficulties talking to an estranged sibling who was announcing as trans and living their life for the last couple years as trans and now being very vocal about it, and what that conversation could be like, saying that they didn't just loved them regardless, and that they wanted to have that conversation now before family members are getting older, it's too late, or before damage in the lack of communication or miscommunication had been done that the family couldn't heal from in people's yeah. lifetimes. So as I'm saying, like some of the most liberal places and environments, it's still a very personal journey.
Yeah, it is. And especially even like back when the first movie came out in 99, the whole culture, even in the most liberal cities, was still much more transphobic than it is now. Like you didn't see out trans actors. You didn't know, you'd probably never heard a trans person's name. Most of my life growing up, I didn't even know trans was a thing someone could be. Right. So it's a really weird thing to have to go through. But when I saw the movie, there's a couple of scenes. There's the first scene where Neo meets Trinity at the dance club, and every single thing she says to him, now even thinking about it, it like broke my soul open, because it speaks to this thing deep, deep inside your subconscious that knows is wrong. And you feel like you're broken and that there's something wrong with you, but that's not the case at all. What's actually broken is the world telling you can't be who you really are. And so that always meant a lot to me. And then the scene where Neo first meets Morpheus, and he talks about how it's always been there, like a splinter in your mind, and you can't see it, but it's all around us and it's everywhere. And it's the prison you're forced into at birth without your consent. And like the whole allegory hinges upon the actual matrix being the cisgender binary that we are all put in at birth without our consent. And for cis people, that's really hard to notice, because you were born and the doctors and your parents all said, you're a boy, and you always felt like a boy, and you are a boy, so you don't notice that there's anything wrong with that. But for a portion of the population that is probably bigger than anyone thinks, that is not true, and that is not the way it works. And so all of society is built around that and upholding it, so that the people at the top can extract power from the rest of us. And it harms all of us, even cis people, all the way through, which the movies themselves illustrate really, really well. So it was probably those two scenes more than anything that really dug a little hole in my heart and made me question what was going on with my life.
Tilly, those are conversation scenes, right? And they're in the yeah. context of this, you know, I don't know if there was a apocalyptic event or how long the machines had been in control narratively in that point. But where does the phrases are all ringing true as you say them? Absolutely. I can understand how those are ringing with you within the scope of the larger reality, right?
Yeah.
Where does the science fiction play in? Where does that stuff start to say, okay, I have to shake free of this node that's been put in the back of my neck, and I have to free myself from this larger society? Is there a way to free yourself from the larger society? Because ultimately, as a trans female, you are living amongst those of us who are still in, you know, some of us still in the machines, right? Yeah. If somebody like myself was a cis male, what is that matrix to me? Does it make sense? Because not everybody is trans. Does it make sense? And
yeah,
so not
absolutely.
All of us have the choice.
Right.
What maybe the matrix to us is the place we aren't, the job we weren't supposed to be in, or the conversation we weren't supposed to, we didn't want to have with a family member, or the relationship. Does that make sense? The relationship we didn't want to be in. And for me, the matrix was always about breaking free of that. It was, to me, a societal commentary, because I didn't have the aspect you had to it, which was a deeper, more internal, this is my being, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you view everyone else? Because at the end of the day, like, Neo doesn't live amongst the machines. Does that make sense? The objects of control, like, you are forced to do so because of our society. I don't know how. Does it make sense? Like well, it's so pervasive, yeah. This stuff, it's, that you can't free yourself from it the way Neo did.
You can, sort of. The way you have to see it is that, okay, so it's hard to explain without getting into.
There's still assholes out there. Is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, yes, they're still right. They're in control. Okay. Mentally, yes, emotionally, I totally get that you can put yourself in a different plane. Yeah,
those people are represented by the agents, by the architect, by the analyst, who are all cisgender white men. They are the ones extracting power from this system, and they are still in control. You don't change the world. You can't change the entire matrix. I mean, we would like to, but that's going to be the work of probably multiple generations. But the entire allegory, it tracks through all four movies, and it follows one person's journey through transition. So when you look at it, the very first movie is about Neo coming to understand and accept his own transness and choosing to transition. And when you get to Reloaded, it's about how once you are an out trans person, society changes the way it responds to you. And it comes for you every second of every day to try to stop you from existing as an out trans person. And if you knew how hard it was going to be after you transitioned, would you still have transitioned? And if that answer is yes, which it is for Neo, and it is for trans people who continue on as our true selves, it's about examining why. Why would you still choose to live a life that's so hard, even if it is the truth? How is that better than living a lie? And when you get to Revolutions, it's about dealing with our own internalized transphobia that society places in everybody, whether we're cis or trans, by virtue of not, it's just the way people are raised, you know, like I mentioned before, where I didn't even know trans was a thing you could be. That's society actively keeping that information
a condition. Exactly right.
And so it's about dealing with that and realizing that if society is this set against us, where can we go in the future? How can we build a better future for trans people, for cis people, for all of us to live together in peace? And when you get to Resurrections, that hopeful look toward the future from Revolutions did not come to pass. And so what has happened is that Neo has detransitioned and gone back to being Thomas Anderson. And that movie is about him waking up to the fact that that was a mistake. That, yes, it's easier to move through the world when you pretend to be the cis man it thinks you are, but you are miserable. It is not living. It is a walking, waking death. And so he must, again, retransition to become who he truly is. And the part that might really blow your mind is that through all four of these movies, almost every major character represents an aspect of Neo's psyche. And Trinity is his self-actualization. She is the person he wants to be, the person he truly is, and who he finally becomes when you get to the end of Resurrections. It's the
and
first
he has to
time
save that person, yeah.
It's the first time he actually gets there. So
do they not say, he goes into the Matrix to save. If I'm recalling the movie properly, he goes in. He puts the whole, let's get a team together. Let's save Trinity from the Matrix. Let's reclaim my transness, as you said. And then at the end, is it not Trinity that frees him as well?
At the end, Trinity is the one who can fly. She's the one with the power and the ability. When he's finally made that,
it all tracks, like that
whole transformation. I mean,
message tracks.
There are so many really, really specific details that it would take me hours and hours to get into in his talk. But that's why there's a book.
There's a book for this.
So yeah, if you're listening and you're like, well, wait a minute, I don't know, just realize there is like 60,000 words of evidence that I was surprised myself to find, but it is all there. And it's a really remarkable thing, because each movie builds upon the one that came before, and they all have different things to say about what it means to be trans and how the world treats us. And it's really remarkable. They use color so very specifically as part of their visual language of telling you what these allegories are. It's really amazing all the way through. It blows my mind, kind of.
Well, I don't think you could hear about the Wachowskis and hear about these movies, which were blockbusters, and not know about the journey they were on with their transness, and know that some of this movie on some level was about that. I mean, for myself, this conversation and the unlocking that you're doing, hopefully to somebody who's listening to this, and maybe they're like, oh, wow. It makes me want to go revisit those two sequels, because I remember when they came out as a, you know, on a filmmaking level, I think we just wanted that first Matrix movie, and they were challenging. Do you remember the reaction that those two movies got? When people are like, still, oh, it wasn't more of the same.
You hear a lot of people maybe deriding the sequels and not understanding them. And I always loved them. Although, again, I couldn't have told you why. But it was later when I found out what they were actually saying about this experience that I know of, that I have in my life, and nothing else that we have out there in media speaks to us trans people that way.
Nothing. In the Matrix is it.
Well, I mean, there are somewhat, not a lot, but there are a few more stories now about trans people on the surface level, right? They're a little bit, not a lot, though. But even still, none of them speak as specifically to as many aspects of trans existence, and none of them are what you would call, they haven't reached a cultural saturation. They're not giant media franchises, IP, right? Matrix is really the thing trans people have.
The video game, the remember the Animatrix?
Yep. I covered that in the book too.
Yeah. So Geekscape is, if you're a fan of the Matrix, I say read this book. If you want to have anything unlocked within you about relating to trans individuals and trans storytelling, you got to read this book. The fact that there's a piece in the book on the Animatrix where multiple creators and voices were contributing to this thing. I think that's kind of cool. What's the story on the Animatrix? Cause I can understand the Wachowskis for the most part having, I mean, obviously Warner Brothers is going to be Warner Brothers, right? I don't think you come out of working with a studio unscathed. And to me, a lot of that Resurrections, yes, the story you told in the allegory you're showing me for that last film absolutely tracks. That is it. That is what they're writing about. But then on that cursory level, which I'm about as smart enough to appreciate, that's about where I appreciated it when I first watch it. Having them just talking about having to go back into that studio system when that movie started and Neo was back in it and the defeat you feel and just the, oh, are you serious? You're after all that, you're back in this.
Yeah.
And are you kidding? It felt like on a surface level, just the relationship with the studio and the way that the video game company was a metaphor for the studio. And it felt like shit talking the studio. And I was like, whoa, this is bold. This is awesome. Yeah.
I mean, it is a little bit like that, but it's also Resurrections very specifically gets into the co-opting and erasure of trans voices. Mm. And they're speaking to it generally to the trans community, but also very specifically to the Wachowskis themselves, because, the red pill has been horribly misappropriated by men's rights activists and the far right to mean the opposite of what they intended it to mean. And so
explain that to me. Cause I'm what?
Have you not?
I
mean,
I understand the color red. I understand I haven't heard that, but I understand sorry, Fred Durst, but the red hat will never, like, you can't wear one anymore. It's done. But I understand the significance of the color red and all that, but there's something called a red pill guy? Is that what you said?
Yeah, there are groups of guys who call themselves red pills. They encourage other cis white men to take the red pill. And to so them, it's
anti-woke shit? Like,
yes, because taking the red pill is waking up to the fact that cis white men are the ones who are being oppressed because people who are not cis white men are now getting some more rights.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I don't even get off the show, Tilly. That's ridiculous. I understand the, like, first off, the whole woke, okay, that's what you're going to fight against. It's like, it reminded me when George W. was saying, like, war on terror. And I was like, oh, that's a war you could win. Like, okay, you're going against, like, a concept, like, you're fighting a concept here. Like,
right.
The idea of, the good news is after that whole thing, after he left office, we were never afraid again. It's really like, what are you talking about? And then when you have this anti-woke thing, it has gotten so stupid that you are now avidly celebrating your own, like, head in the sand ignorance and not wanting to be considerate to another human being and the pridefulness of this garbage. A red pill guy, like, they're called losers.
I agree with you, but
I've never heard of those guys. Like, holy shit.
But the amazing thing is that the Wachowskis are so smart that they knew it was coming. They could see it coming because they called it out in the first two movies.
They created the metaphor, right? They created the red pill, blue pill. And that's where I'm guessing these idiots take the metaphor.
They misinterpreted what the red pill means. The red pill means waking up to the way society oppresses trans people, not the other way around. It's the clearest way is right in the first movie where Morpheus is talking to Neo. And he says that there are some people that are so hopelessly inured to the system that they will fight to uphold it without even realizing that's what they're doing. I'm mangling his quote because I don't remember the exact. That's what he said.
We lived through the last 20 years.
And that's those guys. They saw them coming. They knew that they were so deep inside their own bullshit that, you know, they think that they're outside of it. Even Smith himself goes through that arc where he in Reloaded and through Revolutions, where he believes he's not doing what society wants. He's his own man. He's doing what he wants, but what he wants is exactly what society wants him to do. So they're so far inside that they can't even tell how far inside they are. They think they're outside and they're the deepest ones in. It's a big mess, but they knew it was going to happen from the first movie. And that blows my mind.
I have something that I want to ask about that, but Tilly, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the Resurrections, Smith redeems themselves to a degree, do they not? No, they don't. Okay, then it's inescapable. I know the actor got recast. No,
yes,
okay, but it was still a piece of garbage. Okay, yeah, like you're still a Matrix piece of garbage. All right, well, forget that person. Throw him into the sun. What I wanted to say about the premonition, or the pre-design of the Wachowskis, how much, and I do think that they're, to some degree, there's a level of futurism because they, even on a film appreciation level, they're pushing envelopes of technology, style of, I mean, that first Matrix movie turned into how many stylistic knockoffs, right? Exactly. Like everything was leather and Eastern European dance parties after that point for a while. Like it was, whether you're hunting vampires, werewolves, or what's the one with Christian Bale where they have kung fu, like they have the gun fu. Remember that one? Oh my goodness. That one's hilarious. Everything was tall, like tall trench coats, black in the shades. They set the standard and they set up a lot of style for a lot of things, but the blue pill, red pill, that how much of that came out of a life spent creating that metaphor because you spent a life having people already experiencing the hatred of people who will never wake up to that stuff. And you can never convince of another reality because the argument is that they saw it coming. I think they saw it coming because up to that point, their life had been experiencing that kind of reaction to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even especially, I think, probably in the 90s, when they themselves have now said that they were deeply closeted, that they couldn't even talk about their feelings around gender, or they're wondering if they might be transgender, or what it would be like to transition, or if they were even transitioning already. They couldn't tell people. They had to keep it hidden because they would know the kind of response they're going to get. And so many people, even now, today in 2023, still get that same kind of response from their family, from their societies that they live in, you know, their town, their states. And so I definitely think that they knew it was going to happen. Because they were in it, yeah, they were living it. But if you really want to have your mind blown, the reason the red pill is red is because at the time the movie was made, hormone replacement therapy estrogen pills for women were red, and it was called Premarin, and it looked, yeah, they're little red pills. And the really ironic thing is that now the estrogen pills I'm on are blue, and that's very. Yeah, it's something, but
nobody wants to go with a green or a nice orange for these. No, they no. just want to, they're going to do it that way. Red yeah. and blue. There are other colors that pharma that we can use for some of this stuff. They're like, nah, let's stick to the tried and trues. That's yeah. amazing. And you believe the red pill was, I mean, that's intentional. The coloring is intentional.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Because if that is the medication that they were either at that point probably researching,
yeah.
talking to their doctors about, possibly even already taking. We don't know when they began, and that's really sure. none of our business. But they would know that that's what it was. And to them, that pill symbolized truth. That was what was going to let them live their truth, make their body, or help anyway, help their bodies match their gender.
The red
and
pill.
Help the outside match the inside. And so that was the truth. And that was where the whole interpretation of color through the allegory came from. Because from that moment on, red, and actually even before that moment, when you go back and look, they use red, they use all color very, very intentionally. And red always stands for truth everywhere, all the time, through the entire series, even through the animatrix. You have to look at where it is, where it's not. Why they're showing it to you here. They use visual shot composition really brilliantly. And you have to really look at what they're showing you. Like in the book, I go by timestamps because things are so important and so deep, and you really need to look. And I encourage people to pause on the biggest screen they can watch it on at these timestamps and really look at what's on the screen and why things are where they are, why they look the way they do. And so going through the entire series, red is always truth and blue is always doubt, although there are different kinds of doubt, and yellow is always fear. And okay. the really brilliant thing is that they use the combinations of those colors to tell you more things about the allegory. So if something is purple, there is truth and there is doubt at the same time. The green overcast
so dominant. It's
of
so
the first
dominant.
Three movies is showing you that the cisgender binary matrix is based in fear and doubt, blue and yellow, yeah. green.
These mother, well, they just.
That's how I felt when I first, was writing this. I'm like, how dare you be this talented? Oh my God, I feel so inferior.
They are the levels that. Okay, I liked the Jupiter Rising movie. I'm just going to say it.
I have not seen
Jupiter
it in
Ascending,
a
while. Where, I mean, you can argue Jupiter Ascending, like Channing Tatum's character has like. Animal part, you know, it's like yeah. I think that movie is so fun, and Geekscapists who did not enjoy it, sorry, that's a fun movie, that's a ride. I like Tom Tykwer, who they collaborated with on Cloud Atlas, even though I didn't see the movie. I thought Run Lola Run also came out summer 99 was amazing, and Tom Tykwer is one of those directors that I'm interested in what he does. I got to give it up for Speed Racer though. Watching Speed Racer in the theater was one of my, I went solo to watch Speed Racer. I remember on a Saturday or something. And I just remember loving that movie. So on a visual level, I think the Wachowskis are very precise. I think Bound is incredible. Like, I think that's such a cool movie. That is a pretty carefully laid mousetrap or, you know, Swiss watch of a design film. It is awesome. Geekscape is, if you haven't seen the suspense film Bound, it's really great.
What's also interesting about that is that it's a lesbian love story, right?
Absolutely.
And at the time, 100%. Everyone thought that it was made by two cishet white men. And how could that be? Well, it turns out, no, they're both lesbians, right? So they're like, at least Lana is married to a woman. I'm not sure if Lily is married or not.
Tilly, as a cis male, I can see why a cis male would have made that movie. two beautiful women bound together, like the ropes and the kind of like, you know, the kind of S&M like kind of stuff going on in that movie. It is such a cool movie. Geekscape is, if you haven't seen Bound, which I think was totally overshadowed by just the mega hit that The Matrix was, go back and rediscover Bound. It's great. And find a big screen to watch Speed Racer on. And Jupiter Ascending. It's fun. Like, it's okay to have fun with some of these movies. They don't all have to be. Maybe there's something in Jupiter Ascending that's like, maybe we'll have a conversation about Jupiter Ascending where people are like, hey, you overlooked that stuff. Did you know that Jupiter Ascending was an allegory for? No, I don't know. I have no idea. Tilly, you went through, I mean, you had to have this, you know, not just an internalized reaction to the world outside and the burden and pain that brings, but actual pieces of garbage human beings and their reactions to you growing up. As you said, the environment that you grew up in wasn't one in which you thought you could ever publicly broach the subject of what was going on with you. But people have been vocal or physical, or your life has been tough in places.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did not have a great relationship with my parents. We disagreed on a lot of things, very fundamental level stuff. And so like my mom died before I realized I was trans and came out. But I know that if I had, she would have never accepted me, probably never spoken to me again. She already hadn't spoken to me for like 5 years at the time. So it was, I mean, it was rough. It wasn't physically abusive, but it was emotionally destructive, and it would have just been worse. I have a lot of brothers and sisters, and any deviation from gender norms was derided. You were ridiculed. It was never, ever allowed. And this would be even like the smallest stuff, right? So it was like, if I at some point thought, maybe I want to try growing my hair out, and I did that, or I told them, she would have lost her mind. It was not a environment that was conducive to those things. So it is rough growing up that way. You lose a lot of time, and it's this weird thing that people who transition as adults have to deal with, where we look back at the past, and actually this is another thing that The Matrix actually talks about, where Neo says, I have all of these memories, but none of them were real. And that's what it feels like, because like the example I go to the most, because it's easiest to explain, is the day I got married to my wife. It was the happiest day of my life, but it wasn't all happy because I was miserable. I was wearing a tuxedo, which made me super, super dysphoric. I felt awful. I felt gross. I felt like I was in a body that I didn't know how to be in, playing this role I didn't know how to play. And so every time I look at our wedding photos, it's a really mixed bag, because it was the happiest day of my life and I was miserable through it. And not because of her, because she's wonderful and I love her with all my heart, but it was, your whole life is like that. You know, I look back and I'm like, I didn't get to be a little girl. I didn't get to be a teen girl. I didn't get to be a young adult college age girl. I didn't get any of that stuff. That was some guy I was pretending to be, and it wasn't me. And so it changes your whole life. There's a lot of very real grief, I think, for a lot of trans people who transition as adult, when we look back at our lives and wonder how it could have been different had we been able to be ourselves all the way through it. And that's, I'm not sure that's something that cis people can easily understand, although I think you can if you imagine it. Like, if you know, one thing that
I'm crying.
Oh no,
Tilly, it's like Tilly Bridges wasn't there. You know, you were at your wedding, and Tilly Bridges was underwater, or Tilly Bridges was there.
The metaphor, you know? I use all the time is to say that my gender dysphoria, it's different for every trans person, but mine was like being underwater. It was like I was drowning and no one could see and no one would help because they didn't know. And I didn't know how to tell them. And so everybody in your life, even your friends, your family, the people you love the most, you're separate from them because you can't be yourself. There's this barrier between you. They don't know you all the way down to who you truly are because you can't be that person. And it's like, the very first Matrix movie uses reflections very heavily, very specifically, because they are a really hard thing for trans people, because we look in the mirror or we look in photos, and like my wedding photo, and there's this really uncomfortable, awkward guy with a fake smile sitting next to my wife, and that's not me. And I would look in the mirror my whole life, and that wasn't me. It was some weird, meaty guy robot that I had to pilot for some reason. And so it's a really tough thing. And as you transition, hopefully, if you want to go on hormones, some trans people, you know, have surgeries, some don't. But as you go through your transition, hopefully you start to see the real you come out in those reflections. You start to see the real you come through in photos. And I remember when that first started happening for me, like photos were always hard. I hated being in them. I never thought they looked like me. I hated them. And once I started transitioning, I started taking a lot of selfies, which a lot of trans people do, trying to find ourselves in them. And I would have to take, not even kidding, like 200 photos of myself. And then I would look at them, and all of them would make me feel horrible. They would spike my gender dysphoria. It was awful. And I might find one that I could live with was maybe okay. And as time went on, I had to take less and less. And there was a time, and it only happened like early last year, like around January, February of 2022, where I took one photo and I liked it instantly. And that was it. And I was like, well, that's neat. And then it happened again a few days later. And it happened again a few days later. And I had a streak of 20 of those in a row. And I don't know what caused it. I don't know why it happened, but I never thought I could be there where I could just take a picture and say, look, that's me. I exist and here I am. And it took a lifetime for me to get there. And not every trans person even gets that. So it's...
Until you're able to look at those photos of yourself in that man suit of skin back in the day, and the little boy dressed as a little boy, were you able to reclaim any of that as part of your journey to Tilly Bridges? Are you able to do that? Or is it as dead as the dead name? You know,
it's really tough. It's for a long time, I really hated that guy after I started transitioning because he was the one living my life.
But you don't even have empathy for that.
Well, I do now. I didn't at the time because I had a lifetime of anger built up. Why did he get to live my life for me? Exactly right. He was and then I've come to a point now where I realize that when I was pretending to be him, was doing the best I could with what I had at the time. And it's still really hard to deal with all of your own life that you missed out on. But I got to where I am, and I'm here now, and I'm happy with who I am now. I'm happy where I am now. I have a wonderful son. I have the most amazing wife who stood by me through my entire transition. She had no issues with it. And most trans people don't get that either. And so, it's a really hard, complex, complicated thing. And I've gotten to the point now where I can't really wish things had gone different because I like things the way they are now, and I might not have them. If I transitioned earlier, when I first met my wife, you know, there was no such thing as gay marriage. Even gay relationships were not really very common. You didn't hear about them. You didn't see them. And so we might not have felt that we could even have dated each other or, you know, gotten into a relationship. And then I might not have the wonderful kid that I have now. So it's so hard. You can't wish that it had all happened earlier, because then you wouldn't have all the things you have now. But I wish I hadn't had to go through decades of pain and anguish and loneliness and isolation, trapped in the wrong body. So it's a really hard thing. It's really tough.
Kelly, you made the host cry for that. No, it's fantastic. I think it's great. I've been doing this show since 2006. Geekscapists who've been listening that long, I don't know if I can recall a time on this program where I can recall plenty of times where I've been personal on this program. But I'm so sorry for when I lost my older brother at 17, when I picked up the phone, he'd been hit by a drunk driver. My wife still asks me about my childhood, and so many of those memories are just gone. I don't remember.
Yeah.
And I feel like that Jonathan had the door shut on him that night, and going into my young adulthood there and everything else is like my actual childhood. I don't remember a whole lot of stuff that isn't prompted by photographs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember a lot of the sensations and feelings because that was so painful that night. And it's tough how in your life there are those chapters. They're literally chapters, you know, they close, and you have the before and you have the after. You know, my new relationship with my second wife, Heidi, like that is a new chapter. And so hearing the loss of an entire decade's worth chapter of your life, and we only get one of these fucking things.
Yeah.
It's so fucking sad. I mean, it immediately makes you younger. You're only X number of years old if you've only been alive since. I mean, you just took decades off your age, because that shit didn't count. Oh, no, I'm kidding. It is so sad and so brutal. And in Geekscapists, I think the challenge is to understand through actual aggressions, microaggressions, the way we compose ourselves every day, how are we contributing to an environment where people are shaving off entire decades of their lives as unacceptable to them because they weren't them. How are we contributing to an atmosphere of fear or in hiding, not unlike Neo in the ships, hiding? Yeah. Like, how are we doing that in our lives, and how can we take that apart? I had a grad student, I won't tell too much about this story to not put people on blast, but I had a grad student in a class. It's a film school. We had to record personal stories of ourselves. And this grad student who on the roster, he presents as a he at the break, said, I would like to go next after we get back from break. And can you reiterate the safe space rule of this classroom? And we all came back to the classroom and started the student's project, in which the student admitted that 2-3 weeks, two months prior, when they had been, when I had excused them in an email from coming to class because they had the flu, that they were actually getting a hysterectomy, and so they could practice safe sex with their male partners and not fear getting pregnant. And the class had no idea that this student who was male on the roster, presented male, was male, had been born with female parts and had spent, you know, this is a teenager, or young teens, young 20s, had spent over a decade of their life, if not 15, 16, 17 years, in a different role. And man, that was a day in the classroom. That was just something else. I flunked them for lying to me about the flu. I'm kidding. you told me you had the flu, and I guess I'm going to have to, you lied to me. But it was just, I don't know. I think we have to make spaces for that stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? I want to thank you for doing that, because in doing that, and even talking about it, and even wondering, and even asking, how do you make space so that trans people don't have to maybe go through all of this? You are already one of the people who has woken up to the matrix. You know that there is something wrong. You know that this needs to be fixed. The matrix has so much to say through all four movies about cis people. It's not just about trans people, but there's a lot. It has a lot to say about cis people. It has a lot to say about allyship and what it looks like. And it has a lot to say about the people who write off trans issues as, well, I'm not trans, so it doesn't, I'm not going to worry about it. It doesn't matter to me.
Get the fuck out of here. We're all floating. We're a ball of parasites on a molten rock floating through vacuum. We are stuck on this shit together.
Yeah.
And when you start having that attitude, you can go, fuck, we can shoot you into the sun at this point. Because what are you doing on here with us?
Right.
If you ignore
oppression, you are part of what enables that oppression. And so you are part of the problem. And it also shows
the whole BLM
you,
summer that we had here on Geekscape.
Yes, exactly.
Talking about it. It's a whole fuck. It's like, well, how did you think the redistribution of wealth was going to go?
Yeah.
It was peacefully? Get the fuck out of here. Like, this shit is a revolution.
You can't stand by on that. You have there is no two sides with human rights. There's only human rights. And if you oppose that, you are wrong. If you are indifferent to it, you are wrong. And, you know, for the cis folks listening, I also want you to realize that I think there's a lot in not just my book, but in the movies for you and about you once you understand what it has to say, and the way that really strict gender norms and expectations hurt cis people just as much as they hurt us. It was why women had to fight for liberation and to be able to wear pants and to be able to have their own bank accounts. They show you through in Resurrections how people are turned into the bots, right? That fling themselves out of the window and kill themselves in service of the system. That's what the system thinks of
January
cis people out there.
That was January 6th escapists.
You are just fodder. They don't actually care about you, and they will use you to enact their own ends. They will stoke fear against us, paint us as aggressors, as sexual predators, despite there being zero evidence of
Jesus.
Any of this.
Yeah.
And you'll get scared, and you will support that. And
Tilly, I didn't want to say this, but your family religious? The one you brought up in?
Well, you know, that's a weird question, because we weren't very religious when I was there, but after I moved out, they became very hard right.
But it just seems like, you know, it's like every accusation's an admission, you know, that it's like, it's like, I can't even get into this fucking protect children from this is the drag queen stuff. It's just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
there's you're batting a zero on that stuff,
right?
And it's like protect children from, tell them to quit going to fucking church. No offense to those of y'all, Geekscape is not. No offense to those of y'all who go to church and believe in that stuff. And it's all, I love you guys. Pretty sure you would know by now if that's the church you go to. And
you never know. Like, you know, the Catholic Church has done a whole lot to cover up child abuse and shift members around to different churches so that they don't get found out
control.
And they cover it up. Exactly right.
Also, a completely systematized tool of control, like the Matrix. I mean, it could be really, King James, you're just going to take it upon yourself to rewrite the motherfucker? Okay, cool. Like, what? You're not going to question any of this stuff. The don't question, it's... Tilly, I could talk to you forever about this stuff, but I think what I'm going to end up doing is just reading the book. Geekscape is Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix. This book will be in your hands by the time that Tilly hopefully joins us at the Geekscape booth at San Diego Comic-Con.
I will be at San Diego.
Of the book.
Maybe we could do that.
I think you are going to come by and sign for an hour at the Geekscape booth.
I would love that.
And hang out with us and make me cry again.
I'll give you a really big hug. If you're into hugs. I don't hug people who don't want hugs. I respect bodily autonomy.
I'm into hugs. I love hugs.
Me too.
I had, you know, this is a wonderful conversation, Tilly. I'm so glad for you sharing all this with us. And for the vulnerability and the bravery that brought you here on your journey, and for sharing this hour with me and talking to the Geekscapists and I, just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you for having me on and giving me the space to do that. That's not nothing. It's really hard for trans voices to get a lot of platforming, to get a lot of exposure, and it means a lot. And the fact that you are so open to discussing these things, I thank you for your allyship. You're on the right path, and it means the world. It helps so much more than you know.
See, Geekscapists, dumb people can be allies too. I'm like, I watched that Matrix movie, man. It's pretty cool sci-fi there. The first time I watched Matrix, I was like, pretty cool sci-fi movie.
That's what I thought the first time I saw it too. So
I don't know, Tilly. I think that's something that there's a resonance though. I think you, it woke you up pretty hard from what I can tell in this conversation.
Well,
there was a resonance there that for me, I was like, they're just telling us not to be dumb and to question authority. Like, that's a fairly cursory. I mean, that's, you can't not watch The Matrix and not see it, at least on that surface level. But the much deeper meaning that then became undeniable when we saw the Wachowskis on their journey as trans individuals is huge. And, and Geekscapes, again, the book is Begin Transmission. If you order it, you can pre-order it on Amazon now. It'll be in your hands by the time you come and meet Tilly at the Geekscape booth in San Diego to talk about the book in person and tell her what your favorite chapter is and have her sign it. And that, I love it. I really do. Tilly, where's the best place where people can find you? Maybe like a Twitter or an Instagram or any of that stuff. Yeah, I mean, we got to see these pics you've been taking. These pics that you like now.
Watch out. There's a lot of them. Where are you putting those? Okay. So, I'm on Twitter at Tilly Bridges. You can find me on Instagram at Heck Yeah Tilly Bridges. If you are interested in the screenwriting and tabletop game writing and comic book writing that my wife and I do as a team, you can go to birdguest.com. All of our credits are up there with links to our work. And every week I write a new essay about the experience of transitioning and being trans in this country and what it means. And if you are interested in those at all, you can go to tillystranstuesdays.com. There's over 100 of them archived there. And it's also a podcast now with the same name, Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. And you can listen to it if you like. And we have trans people on from all walks of life. So you can learn that we're just normal humans like everybody else.
Tilly, that's fantastic. Geekscapists, you have your mission. If you've enjoyed this show, you can share Geekscape with your friends. And we've been around. we appreciate shares. We appreciate the reviews. We appreciate all that stuff. But I think there's much more important directions that we've sent you in this discussion. So pursue those. And if you remember us, leave the review and share us as well. I'm here every week talking all sorts of stuff. I've pre-recorded a bunch of episodes that'll be going into the summer. We'll see everybody at San Diego Comic Con, if not before then, at a screening or a local convention or anything. We have 30 shows across the network or so. So our podcasters are always popping up as moderators at panels or walking the floor at cons or at film screenings or video game competitions. I just really love what we built here. And Tilly, you are a part of it now. We have brought you into our matrix. It's a woke matrix, though. Be careful.
It's a good one to be in. It's all right. I'm happy about this.
Nerd Matrix. We love it. Thank you so much, Tilly. And I'll see you, if not on the picket line or somewhere else here, because it sounds like we kind of inhabit similar circles.
I think we do, yeah.
Thanks, Tilly.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.